piles of bone, sinew, and synapse. It's time to tear it all down. Ragnarok is coming, and it's you.
That's the last box for Tyr, right? So all 10 boxes have been marked. Tyr is defeated. Tyr is out of the narrative. What is the thing? What is the result of this action that breaks Tyr down? What actually happens to him?
I have an immediate thought.
Mm-hmm.
Please.
His stuff is burnt. For as much as he was a justice and protector, like, this is a moment where, like, those are my things, right? Those are my treasures. Those are my trophies. Those are the sign that I am the best. And he is not physically beaten, at least not yet. We might describe the moment where he physically is destroyed, but this is the moment where he is exposed to be not this paragon of justice, where he's revealed to be a petty conqueror, right? Like, it is the moment where he is not the noble figure dispensing justice and retribution and, you know, stepping back. The second that he starts to see his stuff goes up, he just cracks and starts screaming and trying to put out fires and swinging the sword kind of randomly and, like, actively, like, just has this rage-filled red face breakdown of, like, eye of screaming and anger and lashing that just underscores, these are mine and I am angry that these things that I have taken and that I deserve to take and that belong to me because I took them are being harmed, right? Like, there is no justice to it. It's just, I want them, they are mine, and you are taking them from me.
And in many ways, as Tyr rushes towards this collected pile of goods, of memorabilia, of trophies, of signs of what once was, and they burn away before he can save them, he himself is reduced. He diminishes because he had for so long held on to these things as a link to the justice that he once doled out. And it burns almost like flash paper. Mm-hmm. These things go up faster. And granted, you all haven't seen a lot of fire. It's not like house fires happen, things like that. But in Jotunheim, it's a thick, oily kind of thing because there's so much bioorganic material around that it's denser. Things burn slowly. Mm-hmm. It smells bad. Thick black smoke. Here, it's almost like bright flares, like memories disappearing as, you know, you come to terms with reality that's in front of you. And all that's left is a relatively impressive, but it's just a control room. You've seen them before. It's the command center of the Panopticon. It's a bank of monitors, bigger and larger than you've ever imagined, but it was provided by Heimdall. It has nothing to do with Tyr. And in that moment, he's just a broken man with a rusted and pitted sword. In the aftermath of this fireworks display of lost memory, he's on his knees next to what was the fire pit, with a battered, rusty, pitted, notched sword across his knees. And as you watch, before you all get whatever final action you all take against him, his right hand, that was just bone and ligament, crumbles to dust. And he's left there on his knees with no hands.
No pressure, Idas. It's up to you.
I mean, Idas is currently in a bad way. And I don't want to downplay that. Nor do I want this moment to be like some sort of immediate triumphant resolution to what has just happened. I don't want to downplay the physical harm that Ida suffered here. That's not a moment I'm interested in having. But I think that maybe the most fitting thing for Idas would be for, you know, their companions to come sort of help pull them up off the ground and get to experience this together.
I think Ronnie walks over and kind of like loads you onto their shoulder,
mm-hmm,
and kind of stands there and like looks. And so the three of us are all kind of standing with you leaning on my shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Is Groa gone?
Do I have to deal with the consequences of my glitch dice as soon as Groa leaves?
No.
Then yeah. Okay. The danger has gone. Groa feels satisfied, you know? This isn't quite the heroic effort of a giant, but nonetheless, it is fitting for a god.
And I think that, Idis, as you're being helped up by your companions, the communicator in your ear crackles to life.
Oh.
And you hear Roy's voice. What status report? What's going? What is going? Can you hear me?
Oh, hey, Ron. What's your name again?
Hi, Roy.
Roy. Thank you.
When Roy gets any kind of positive confirmation back, and when it's this casual, like, "Hi, Roy," sort of moment.
Hey, Roy.
You hear like this sort of dull booming sound. Not like of an explosion, but of like doors being kicked open.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear like a lot of booted feet running toward you, which you can now see that the hallway you came down is what, like 100 feet long?
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
And Tyr's door is like burned down with the rest of it. And there's now natural light coming into this space as members of the resistance are now streaming into the Panopticon for the rescue effort, for the cleanup, for your moment as heroes.
I know exactly the next thing that happens. I think that Ronnie turns to Aki and kind of like lifts up Idis's shoulder and is like, "Hey, can you take Idis?"
Yep, Idis, I gotta crouch. You're so much shorter than I am.
Like stands for a second and using another one of the abilities on my sheet, looks at the two of you and is like, go meet your friends, I'll meet up with you.
But like, we're supposed to go out as heroes. Do you not want to
go have your moment, and I will meet up with you?
Is it because I insulted the way you look?
It's not. It's Aki. It's not. Go have your moment.
Okay.
And I will meet up with you.
Okay. I trust you.
And Ronnie snaps, and as the two of you turn, Ronnie snaps her fingers, and all of the lights in this room shut out and go pitch black, and we see the two of you. We see the two of you leaving, and we hear the unsheathing of a knife, and we cut to whatever is next.
So, we have a brief sort of like montage-y moment of Aki and Idis being like escorted out, and it's a little bit posed, it's a little bit staged, mm-hmm. right? Like the bloody survivors of the Battle mm-hmm. of Tyr, right? There are, you know, camera drones all around, mm-hmm. and as it turns into whatever it's going to turn into, I think we fade back into like the fog and smog and low clouds of Jotunheim, because what I want to do to wrap this up is I want to go around and have everyone sort of give a montage moment of what happens to them following all of this. And that's why I lighted over that moment, because you can backfill into it if you want to talk about that actual moment, if that's pertinent to your character. And then as a group, I want to discuss one moment that is sort of like pointing towards the resistance not being over yet, mm-hmm. with the knowledge that the next AP that's going to happen is for Mimir and the Archive.
Mm-hmm.
So who would like to do their montage moment first?
Do you have something, Alex?
I can take something. I think I just have kind of a smallish moment.
Okay.
Which is that I think the moment we get with Idis is Idis back in puppet strings. And, you know, I want it to be known. There's no way to like just show this, but I can just hand you information. That's the benefit of an audio format storytelling medium, that there were other places that Idis could have undergone recovery. You know, there are secret bunkers, you know, safe houses that the resistance has, but there was absolutely nowhere that Idis would have accepted other than being back in puppet strings, you know, while they are sort of rehabilitating, healing an entirely cracked rib cage and, you know, multiple other bones. And I think that when we see him, you know, she's still kind of bruised up. There's like a black eye and, you know, some shallow cuts on the shoulders and, you know, looking more bandage core than ever. But there's probably like some cyberpunky stuff where you have like a vest on that shows like the process of healing your various bones. There's like LED outlines of ribs that like show various states of repair, like loading bars, but they're where your rib bones would be. And, you know, all of that. But sort of otherwise, just like lying back in a comfortable but otherwise somewhat lacking bed, you know, in somebody's house, just recuperating. And I think that that's sort of the the moment that we get. That's the important thing, is that Idis is home and there are other people taking care of him. And I think that maybe there is like some younger, like young teen-ish person who is very clearly a wolf, who is like sort of fulfilling that role of, you know, bright-eyed and eager and like, oh, wait, like, I'm going to bring you something that you need. Like, here's a tea, or like, here's something else. And, you know, jumping in and, you know, a fond smile on Idis's face, sort of like, things are going to be okay. Because I think there is this expectation and this understanding in Idis's mind that, like, now that they've finished this thing, now that they've become what the resistance needed them to be, there is no real going back to puppet strings, not in the same way. You know, whatever her job is from this moment forward, it's not going to be the community street medic. It's not going to be, you know, checking on kids that need babysat or stuff like that. Like, there's going to be a lot of time away from home, but it's good to know that there are other people who are going to step in and that that role will be filled.
If I may, we just met a new character. That eager wolf.
Oh.
Is named John Goodson.
John Goodson.
John
Thank
Goodson.
Thank God.
What a cutie.
What's his first detail?
John Goodson's first detail is that he has like a little crescent moon tattoo on his left shoulder. It's not particularly well done. It was very clearly like done by a friend who had like some, you know, whatever the cyberpunk equivalent of stick and poke tattoos is now. There's like some little fiber optics in it. Like, it looks like it should be sort of a light up tattoo, but some of the filaments are like burnt out. So it looks a little messy, but it's like one of his most distinguishing features, and he is extremely proud of it.
Yes. Very good. B, what's the second detail?
I think that John Goodson is as hairy as he is helpful. I just love alliteration.
In parentheses, he is very helpful. And Jeff, what's his third detail?
This is a detail in action more than a visual detail, but it is has a holographic clipboard that like is floating in front of him and things are getting checked off. And we see that things are getting checked off very quickly, but like the list is ever expanding. The detail is ambition larger than any capacity could hope to be, right? Like it's partially, this is Jeff pontificating. It's partially like imagine stepping into the roles of one of the people that brought down Tyr, right? Like, and it's partially like the kind of person that would offer to do that, and also just the kind of person that for whom like there will like that list will always be expanding, like without the same kind of experience that Idis has, but is just making up for it through raw utter enthusiasm of like, I'm just gonna take care of everything, like I'm going to do all of these things that Idis just effortlessly did, but it's going to take me work.
Oh, I love this little cyberpunk zoomer.
Right?
Yeah. Aww. That's why I wanted to do the details, right? Because the people matter.
John Goodson will return in Ironetta 2.
In the bubble. He may. And Aki.
The last scene we see is the camera kind of pans outside of Idis's window. And there's this kind of shabby looking digital billboard outside. And it's just like advertising like a generic chocolate bar or something. And then the screen kind of fritzes a little bit, goes staticky, and then you get kind of like the multicolored blocks. And then the screen changes and it's back to high quality. But this time it is Aki. And they're dressed in traditional Aki wear, 6-inch platform heels or boots strapped all the way up to the knees, buckles all the way up. Lace, leggings, bodysuit, long, long black hair right down to the butt, obnoxiously long nails, long legs, and Aki is posing. And above that, above him is the title, like, do you want to join the resistance? The camera kind of pans back, and you see, like, what could be an Idis, maybe a Ronnie, maybe some body doubles. We're not entirely certain. And Aki kind of goes through, like, it's like a walkthrough, like, so you want to join the resistance? Gotta see if you have what it takes. And there's like various shots on like the Pentoptagon, all the injured, all the destruction, all of the chaos. And then there's like shots of puppet strings. And like Aki is continuing to talk. And she's like, if this is what you want to protect, our home, our people, even yourself, come join the resistance. And there's like a really sketchy series of numbers on the bottom that you have to decrypt, and they change every time this little alert comes up.
To build on that, I actually love the idea that, like, it pans back and, like, we get the maybe body double, maybe real, like, maybe real itis, but then, like, the camera, like, visibly pans to the right, and, like, the third person we see is, we'll say Knives Blau. Knives Blau had knives for feet, and like, it is very specifically, like, and pointedly, somebody else. And, like, and maybe that's when it segues over to Ronnie, as like, it's like, wait, that's not, and then we see Ronnie, we see what has happened to Ronnie.
Yes.
I kind of know exactly, I've been thinking about this all week, and I know exactly the moment with Ronnie. We get a close-up on, I think, as we see the montage of the rescue effort and the ending of the battle and your sort of stage moments, we hear a voiceover that just says, and now that that's out of the way, and we come back and we see a close up of Ronnie's face, and they're smiling and they're just against like a stone wall, and they start talking, and the camera starts to back up, and we see, and they are wiping their hands, and they walk away, and they're like, all right, here's the deal, my friends. There is more work to be done, but there's going to be some changes. And we pan out a little further, and there is blood splattered on a wall behind them. And they finish wiping their hands, and they wipe a knife, and they stash it. The way that we used to operate things was that people were disposable. The way that we used to operate things was that we had the expectation that people died. But I think that today, I think that this battle has proven that impossible things are not always as they seem. And we pan out a little further, and she gives this, like, wry smile. It's the smile that, like, had Itis and Aki been in the room for, like, you would recognize it in an instant. And this is the moment also where Ronnie crackles a little bit, and we see that this is, like, a hologram, and, like, XX Burnt Umber is there, and, like, we're back in that room. Mm-hmm. And Ronnie is smiling and is like, now, how I'm going to run things. And she gives a smile and looks back, and the body of Roy is behind her.
Ooh.
Is a little bit nicer. And she gives like the biggest grin as she stashes the knife and cracks her knuckles and just goes, now let's get to work. Thank you all for letting me introduce the character of Roy, and thank you all for letting me murder him in the most vicious way possible.
Yeah, wow.
I'm delighted. For a second, I thought where you were going with that is the secret reveal that, like, Ronnie had been the shadow leader of the fucking right? resistance this whole time. But, like, that was amazing.
That felt fitting.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I love it. And then, are you all comfortable if I handle the ominous, the resistance is not over moment yet?
Yes. Yeah.
So, actually, I have one small request.
Please.
Just for our own closure. Can we have a scene with the three of us together?
Please! I'm dying over here. You can't just, like, remove Ronnie from the situation and, like, not expect me to care.
All right. So I'll give the portentous thing.
Yeah, okay.
And I'll use that to frame y'all's final scene together.
Love it.
It's hokey, it's shticky, it's cliche, but it happens. This has all happened in Puppet Strings, and we get it's like the moment in The Matrix where the camera pans through the TV monitor, right? And you get that mm-hmm. distortion that lets you know that you're now watching something on a display
mm-hmm.
somewhere. The light is that sort of same bluish white neon that lit the entrance to the heart of Tyr, right? And it's reflected across this thick glass encasement. And if you all have ever played any games in the Doom franchise and you've seen the spider demons, mm-hmm. right? They're just the big brains with the mechanized legs yep. down
mm-hmm.
below.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that, but it looks real and it's about five times larger and it has nine legs, each of which have nine joints.
What?
As the camera pans back, we've seen shots of the archive before. There are spider drones like this all over the place. They're sort of the servitors that skitter about and maintain the organic computer banks that are the giant's brains that make up the data banks of the archive. But as the camera pans back, you get a sense of scale, and this thing is massive. It is literally like a spider brooding on a web as we get shots of information feeding into it, but nothing is returned. And we know in this moment that we are seeing Mimir himself, the god of the archive, the god of knowledge. And in a rare hint of what is to come, Mimir gives nothing without taking more. A little, like, fingers open up on the end of one of these legs, and like a display, like, frames into existence, like a holographic display. And on that display, we see three people. And the camera zooms into that display, and we get that warping sensation as we go through the holographic display. And we see Idis, and we see Aki, and we see Rani. If I may take a guess, on a houseboat.
Yes!
I believe we are on a houseboat, yeah.
Docked at the edge of the brain pan with the soft, warm pulse of Groa in the walls.
Exactly right.
Okay, I found another bottle of half-open champagne. I think this is enough to celebrate.
Fit for heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait. Hold on. Knocks on a wall and it's hard. Knocks on one wall and it's hollow. Punches it a little bit, like, rips through, pulls out, like, two full bottles of champagne.
Oh.
Come on. Have a little faith in me.
Did those come with the promotion?
Well, I could tell you that, but I would have to kill you, and I believe you know how serious I am.
Those aren't refrigerated, but sure, it's fine, I'll drink it.
I think that you I hand you a glass and it is ice cold, and it just raises so many more questions.
Alright, well, who wants to make our toast? Grow it, no, not you. Lights flicker all around.
Oh, hold on. I think I grab one of the empty bottles and I, like, set it on. I put it sideways on the ground so it starts to spill out. There we go. Now we're good. We're good.
Thank you.
Terrible, terrible host I am.
Idis sort of laughs and raises her glass and says, to Groa, the first giant to kill a god in ever?
Yeah, to Groa.
I raise a glass and I stomp on the ground at the bottom of the boat a little bit. You did good, kid.
So you stomp on the floor and you say, good job, kid. And that sort of warm bluish light pulses out. And as the camera, like, it's almost like that pulse kicks the camera out of the room. And as the camera sort of pans back over the brain pan and over Jotunheim, you can see the city looks calmer for a moment. And the sort of electric plankton that are in the water of the brain pan that, like, usually will end up spelling out advertisements. They start to go into an advertisement and then they flicker, and Aki's recruitment commercial begins playing on the screen that is the brain pan, and we fade to black.
So, you want to join the resistance? Gotta see if you have what it takes. If this is what you want to protect, our home, our people, even yourself, come join the resistance.
Hey!
Y'all.
That's a podcast.
Beginning to end. Yeah.
Boom.
Damn. That felt complete.
Yeah.
We did it. Wow.
Yeah.
I want to do our usual roses and thorns and that sort of thing. I want to reflect on sort of this entire process. And I know I've said this kind of thing a lot throughout this because I wanted to be very vocal with my appreciation for the time that you have all taken for this. I didn't know what this was all going to be when we started doing it, right? That's the point of a playtesting mm-hmm. podcast, is we started off with a very, very different system
mm-hmm.
than what we ended up with.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
I didn't expect this. I didn't expect to be at this place where I've now made this thing. I'm just going to let myself get emotional. It's fine.
Do it.
I've now made this thing with three people who, through the various contexts that we know each other, have become very dear to me. And what this system can do has surpassed any expectations that I had for it.
I love that.
Alex, you and I, though the world knows not of it because I fucked up the audio, we had a really amazing moment on a Pokemon podcast years back, right? And I did not come into this thinking that I wanted to capture that sort of magic that happened, but I think we ended up doing it anyway. And that moment of roleplay, and I know this is really inside baseball because it's a thing that me and Alex did that no one has ever heard, but it was a real true connection of two people playing roles who got to be true to those characters in a moment that felt really vibrant and very, very real. And I had never really experienced something like that before in role-playing, especially not remotely, right? Like, mm-hmm. stuff can happen in person, but being across a computer screen from somebody else, that can be challenging. This campaign that we have done has had so many of those moments that I am beggared to put into words how that makes me feel. It is so much more than I could have expected. I'm so thankful and I am so grateful for all of it. And now I'd like to listen to you all talk because I think I just need to close my eyes and let some tears run down my face for a second or two.
Yeah. I have actually very similar feelings. I love making podcasts. It's my favorite thing. It's my literal actual 9-to-5 job. This is my life. Like, and I had said at a certain point, this back in, we started this what, in September?
Yeah.
August? I was kind of like, look, my capacity is pretty booked up. Like, I don't have time for more stuff. When Tracy, when you came to me and said, this is the project, and these are the people, these are the four of us would be the people involved. It was the easiest decision in the world for me to say, yeah, obviously, I will find the time for this. Like, it was, and I'm glad I did, because it was everything that I wanted it to be and then some, right? Like, and you know, I have a fair amount of experience playing Iron Edda based games on podcasts, Tracy, with you specifically.
Probably more than anyone else in the world aside from me.
You don't count.
And like the Party of One games that we played, like, this really does feel like the thing that we came across, like thing that we walked away from the game with, feels like such a culmination of like all of those experiences as well, in a way that like this is an astoundingly special, like the finished game is like an astoundingly special thing, because like I can feel, having played a lot of Iron Edda and like told the kinds of stories that we told in it over those Party of One episodes, like this is where we were reaching with this, with those episodes and those stories and those experiences, and to feel it play out, and like to feel it play out, and to really like, that's part of it, but like the core of what made this a special experience for me was getting to say, like, about once a month, about once every couple of weeks, getting to sit down with, like you said, three people that I treasure with all of my heart, and be able to like, that first gameplay session might have been the second, like the session where it was largely the three of us on a boat.
I think
that was the second proper gameplay session, remains one of the most special experiences I've ever had, because it was just really like, it captured that there was this sense of palpable like love of the story and of each other that was in that moment, that I was like, this is going to be a special thing, right? Like, this is going to be, we are all talented performers, but this is going to be something that reaches past performance, which I think is very easy to lose sight of. And I think that's part of what makes things special for me, is it's so easy to put on a good show, right? Like, we're all talented show people. We can all put on a hell of a performance, but to find a real human connection, a real human story over these last 7-8 episodes has been incredible. It's been what I want out of everything that I work on.
Now I feel like this was too short. I remember thinking, like, damn, we've been recording this for quite some time now, but when you quantify it, we should probably record more.
I mean...
Just kidding. No, we did great. But, like, similar to Jeff, so episode one, I remember, like, I was very, very excited for the cast. I love working with Tracy, but I remember looking at the system, looking at the character sheet, and being like, well, I'm probably gonna mess this up, but I'll show up and do my best. And then as we began to develop things together, have conversations about what we really wanted, what we wanted to see, what we enjoyed, like, and bringing that all together for what this has become, has just been fantastic. That boat episode was where things started to click for me as well. And I was like, damn, I'm a bone bonded. This is going to be really fucking amazing. And lo and behold, it absolutely was. So, like, thank you everybody for being vulnerable. Thank you for being so insightful, so creative, so gosh darn smart. The stuff that you come up with on the spot to do your moves, I'm just like, I just wanted to behead somebody. And y'all are like, I'm going to hack into this and do this and hurt his feelings and destroy everything. And I'm just thinking, like, I was really just hoping for beheading. But all right, we're going to do it the smart way. I'm here for this. So it's just been an absolute, like, an absolute joy. Thank you.
It's so funny that you say that because, like, I know in my, well, I guess personal slash professional life, it's hard to delineate between the two when it comes to this type of content.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I definitely think of myself a lot more as, like, a GM and as, to a certain extent, a game designer than I do, like, a player. I don't regularly play in the same way that I do those other things. I mean, I guess, like, I've done enough guest spots on other people's things now that, like, player is a thing I do, but I still always get very, very nervous about it in a way that I, like, weirdly don't about the other stuff. But it's just, like, so hard to, you know, lock into a character and then sort of do the mental gymnastics all the time, because I feel like as a perma GM, I'm so perpetually aware of something that I wrangle in my own parties, which is, like, how do I make sure everybody's getting enough screen time? How do I make sure everybody's story is getting told? How do I make sure everybody's getting these moments where they really shine? And I feel so, like, reticent to take them for myself because I'm like, these characters rule. I'm, like, looking over here and I'm like, the bone bonded is, like, the most badass thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, what am I doing here? I'm just going to stand and watch and just, like, wow, I can't roll to, like, look adoringly at you. So that's the closest thing I got. But, you know, I mean, and to, like, Jeff and B, you guys just are absolute rock stars. And so I know, like, for the first half of this, you know, campaign, I really just spent the whole time being like, wow, this is so cool. I should have come up with a cooler character. I don't know what I'm doing here. Like, I'm just going to stand and watch. And I am so grateful to both of you for being the kinds of table mates who make sure that that, like, doesn't happen, who, you know, are looking for opportunities to lean into party dynamics and, you know, invent truths at a way that cultivates that kind of awesome thing. Because we ended up with some really, really cool moments that I was, like, not anticipating and was, like, so, so grateful for in the end there with Idis. So I'm really, really happy about that. And I'm really grateful that I was able to do that. And I feel so spoiled, you know, like, aww, as somebody who gets to sit down and, like, take a game and say, here are the things I don't like about it. Let's change it so it's easier for me personally to play and then
Loved it.
That's, I'm not going to lie, that's no small thing. Because, you know, similarly, I came in and looking at this character sheet and I was like, I hate to be the guy who phones it in, but, like, I'm looking at this and I'm not going to learn all these rules and I'm never going to remember these mechanics. And so now to be at a point where it's like, oh, we're just doing the stuff that we all made up and agreed upon along the way. Like, that's a perfect game. I'm going to remember this for the rest of my life because we just did it like that. And that's, you know, what a rare and beautiful thing.
Can I throw a question to all four of us? I just, just to continue to gush about this thing that we made. I would love to hear all four of us. Like, if you had to just, it doesn't necessarily have to be, like, capital F favorite, but, like, a favorite moment from the story that we told. Like, I'd love to hear, like, a just, like, one moment that you're like, this is the moment that I, like, threw fists in the air and screamed about. B is raising their hand very aggressively. Yes.
Pick me. Okay.
B is ready to roll.
So normally it would be like, we took, like, the Hand of Tear. Loved that. I love like the cinematics of combat, but the moment, like, aside from the boat scene where I was like, oh my god, I love all these characters, I love this world, I love these silly people with their bad attitudes, it was when the three of us were pulled in to speak with, like, Burt Umber and Roy, the R words, the R names destroy my brain.
Ronnie's predecessor.
Yes. But just, like, that interaction with those four-ish characters, and Tracy got to be a part of the scene, and it was just a really, really cool moment for all of us to be interacting, to be sassing, and it was just to learn a plan that ended up being the most intense, mind-blowing, earth-shattering plan that we have ever done.
It really was, and that was kind of like from the structure moment, like that was when the kind of Etic engine kicked into high gear for me, was really getting to be like, oh, these are just a bunch of characters, and by the end of the scene, we were like, these are these characters' personalities, their lives, like they have a structure to them that was astounding.
Mm-hmm.
What about y'all?
I think my favorite moment is it starts at that point, and then it has a culmination that was much, much later.
Okay.
Because as, like, the quote-unquote designer of this game, which It's all four of us. Like I'm trying to figure out how to do these design credits, and all four of our names may just be on the cover of this thing, because like, yes, I melded together my favorite things from a bunch of different systems, but like most of what I do design wise is like weird instinct for what I think might work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually pulled off because I do at the table what I do when I'm facilitating a game. And then I find a way to put that into text that like, oh yeah, I think this will function without me. You took all the things that I laid down and helped mold them and shape them in. If you were to ask me like for specific things, I would not be able to name them, but your fingerprints are all over this entire thing, just based on how you interacted with it and interacted with the characters. So that moment where we first switched to a different scene with different characters, gave them all details, embodied them, and just went was great. It was that excitement of, I've never seen this happen on the fly before.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard it happen in actual plays where the players have been given character sheets in advance and they're going to know they're going to switch over to these characters at some point in time, and they're talented improvisers and they did it that way. Mm-hmm. But to just have four people who are good gamers, good performers, smart people, engaged in what's happening, but to take characters and literally make them and 5 minutes later be playing them with the depth that we did,
mm-hmm.
stunning. And it culminated with the Battle of the Hand of Tyr.
Yes.
Because we did that thing, and these very on the surface weird looking mechanics
mm-hmm.
of rolling personality details and having these clan things that can affect your die rolls and can be used only certain times. On the surface, it looks kind of a mess, right? Like you kind of go, how am I going to actually do this? And in practice, it works so well. To see it play out in a heavy combat scenario that was knocked down, drag out, high stakes, people could die, mm-hmm.
people
there are explosions
die.
Happening, the room's going to come down around our ears. Like to have the same system function for that, I was on cloud nine after that. I knew that this system could do anything I wanted it to do. And that was amazing to me. So that's my extended moment.
Yay.
Alex, I know mine, unless you want to go.
Oh, give me yours. Let's hear it.
I can maybe count on one hand the times I've been as breathless. Like, as with a podcaster and a player and a person at a table, I can count on the number of times with maybe one hand the times I have been as breathless and like the times that my heartbeat has been as high and I have just been as like hands on the table, edge of my seat tense as at the end of the Battle of the Hand of Tyr.
Yes.
Like the way that all four of us like just said, okay, let's lean in, everybody, like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a testament to all four of us and the three, like all everybody here's commitment to like really throwing themselves was the moment where your character was just like, no, I'm not taking the shot. I'm backing down. Like I'm running. Like
yeah.
you just had that breakdown moment. I was like, all right, well then I'm blowing this all to hell. And like watching all of that happen. And Alex, when you were like, yeah, I'm going to die. This is the end of my story. This is the end of this character's story. And mm-hmm. like, the willingness that we all had to throw ourselves at that led to just, I think, some of the best, some of the most exciting podcast stuff that I've ever put out in the world. And just one of the greatest like play experiences that I've ever had is that experience, just feeling that level of there have been a lot of points in this campaign where I would describe it as a sort of like magical feeling out process, almost of like a sort of this almost like a fragility is how I would like, there's the sense, there's been a lot of moments where I've kind of just been kind of mystified and just kind of like poking things and going like, is this real? Like, is this what it's going to feel like? And then that was just a moment where it was that, but like in this, it with this sense of like rush of excitement of like, oh wow, this is actually what this is going to be like, was one of like a highlight of my career and like was a game experience I'll remember forever.
Oh, I love that so much.
That battle did rule. The Hand of Tyr thing like kicked ass. Yeah. I mean, people who went to art school love to say that things are a masterclass, but I really feel like sitting at this table was like a masterclass in character work. I feel like I had the opportunity and the honor to learn so much about like being a player at a table from you guys. And I'm really, really grateful for that. I know I've said this on camera and on mic and off before, but like, I am just genuinely so impressed by the choices that you make and like the commitment that you have to just like, I'm doing this thing now. And like, this is what the character would do. And this is what I am doing. And like, mm-hmm. I'm sorry if this like, you know, interrupts anybody else's plan for this character, but this is the truth of the character and this is the truth of the moment. And I think that's so, so cool. And I mean, you know, Jeff, you know that I love playing with you. I've told you before, you're like on my hard yes list at any given moment. And that will continue to be true for as long as we're doing this thing. But and Tracy, like, I am just so genuinely thrilled to have been a part of this. I think that one of the things that I like am most enamored with of this system, and I've been sitting here like trying to think of something that I could point to as like a singular vector in a way that is both useful and also like, you know, a chance for me to gush about the things that I love about this. That I think you either, you know, I don't know if this was always the goal or if this was a natural consequence of the way that we ended up pushing this game, but I think it's brilliant, was like the fact that we got to the end of this and the big bad was something that we all designed as we were fighting it, created something that I think was really, really unique and beautiful in that, like, as a GM, and I've GM'd a long form campaign that is pretty explicitly like much more emotional and narrative than it is mechanical, like the hardest and most rewarding thing in the world, like the one thing you want your players to do is to care about like what they're doing. You want them to be invested in the circumstance. And that's like a hard needle to thread, you know, to hand something that is like mechanically challenging enough that people will stay engaged with the moment and like that there will feel like there are stakes, but not so boring that people like tune out during combat. And you can't just not have combat. So like it's a hard and intimidating thing to wrap your head around as a game designer or as a GM or anything. Like, how do you do that? How do you build an end to your campaign that makes sense, that also feels earned, and that like is big enough to justify occupying the space that it occupies? And like, it's so funny that the simplest and most brilliant explanation to that is you make them do it. Like, you make your players build the guy they're fighting. Because they're going to care about it. And like, that is so, it's like so simple and it's so elegant and it's so effective. And like, what has been very cool about this whole thing as somebody who like both has game designer brain, but also was like actively playing in the moment, is there are things that like I saw as we were doing them, like, oh, okay, yeah, that's how that works. But it didn't stop me from getting roped into it, you know, which is just mm-hmm. fun. Like, it's fun when you can look at something and be like, I know exactly how this grocery store is using psychology to get me to buy those snacks. Still gonna buy them, though, yeah. is like, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. that was the experience of a lot of this. And I think that one of the coolest moments for me was like finding out what Tyr was going to be like as we were the ones doing it. And it was cool to like have that vision when we walked in, clearly, of like what you had thought about Tyr being. But the fact that even at that moment, like so much of it was designed by us was really, really cool. And, you know, then it led to these really great, big, awesome, sweeping character moments in the fight where I felt like everybody got to say something they wanted to say about the story we were telling as a whole, because the culmination of it was something that we had set up for ourselves and designed. So like, we knew what kind of moments we wanted, whether that was like on an intellectual level or just like impulse of the moment. And we designed a guy who would let us have them. And that's everything, you know?
That, I think, Alex, you have really encapsulated what this system is with that sort of rundown of your feelings on it. In a lot of ways, this is the culmination of the 10 years I've been designing games, right? Like, the very first game that I made was predicated on the idea that we all share a common knowledge of what high school movies are, mm-hmm. and we're just going to go and do the thing, right? And I can see now, to use the terminology that Jeff said when talking about the previous Ironetta games, these are things that I have been reaching for as a player and as a GM in a lot of different ways for a long time. Mm-hmm. And even in systems that exist without my design influence, like Fate, right, where that's what the original Ironetta stuff was, it was still run. I always ran it the way that I ran it, and it was slightly different. And that's true for every game designer. But like, my players had played Fate, like my home game group had played Fate with other people and had played Fate with me. And they called it Tracy Fate because it was always a little bit, I think it was trying to find a way to mechanically do what the Edic engine does now. And I think that without this campaign without all of us leaning into those things, like finding those impulses as designers and as storytellers and as players that we wanted to see breathed into what we were doing. Without all of us working together, I would not have gotten to where this system is. And this is going to sound really like a really strange thing to say at the end of an Iron Edda Reforged podcast, but I'm really excited to see what comes next for the system when it's decoupled from Iron Edda Reforged, because I fucking love Iron Edda. You all know. I mean, it's my big IP, if you will, right? It's also a real pain in the ass to try and communicate to people what it is, because Reforged is an idea based on an idea based on an idea. It has a lineage that's now three games deep.
Oh my goodness, yep.
And is also coupled to Norse mythology, which is problematic for people for very understandable reasons. Mm-hmm. Despite the, you know, I can do all the work that I want to put in new runes and to make it very clear that white supremacists are not allowed. It's still a tough pill to swallow for some people. Mm-hmm. Understandable. When I or somebody else makes a more conceptually approachable game using this system, I think it's going to do a lot of really cool work in the industry. I don't want to get my hopes up. Like, I don't want to assume that it's going to be, you know, the next anything. I don't even want to reference other systems, but like, I think it has the potential to help people change the way that they think about approaching games.
Yes.
If they approach it earnestly and really play to what the system says that it does on the tin. Because it, Alex, you put it in a nutshell, it's just asking the players to do it. It's just asking all of us to band together. And that's been my thing from day one has been like, look, you all have amazing brains. Anyone I'm playing with, your brain is fantastic. It has great ideas in there and it will come up with things that I never will. So let's put it all together. And what we make together will be so much greater than any of us could have made on our own. And this entire campaign is emblematic of that.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. I have one more thing I have to gush about.
Please. Yes.
I have to tell a story. And it's something that we had said.
What do you think we've been doing for the past 14 hours?
Hey.
So this is I think I've kind of been thinking about this and I've landed on something that is kind of my experience with this podcast in a nutshell. And it is that partway through our second or third session, when we were just like, we need to make 8 characters quick. We're putting down names on a sheet. And I got the impulse. I was like, it would be really funny if one of these characters was named Roy. It would be really, really funny if that were the case. And then in doing that, I then followed it up with an impulse of, it would be really, really funny if this character was like a legendary figure.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow doing those two things just to make myself laugh and to make three of my friends laugh when they saw it on a sheet of paper. On a slide in a Google Slides, because I was surrounded by three of the most talented storytellers that I know, like, it was that impulse, like, we pushed past the laugh, and, like, every one of us, like, pushed past that laugh and was like, well, there's also this little piece of true, like, of tragedy in that, and in horror of that, and of drama in that, and it created this character that I hated, and that I loved, and I loved playing, and I loved playing against, and that, like, was a beautiful sort of like protagonist, antagonist, anti-hero figure for our story. And we said before we started last session, I know that Alex, you and I both just said, kicks ass that a character is named Roy.
It does. And you know what? We were right. It does kick ass that a character was named ass. Roy.
And like, it just all like, it's what makes this so special that like, we didn't just... And I didn't just because I was surrounded by talented, wonderful people that like were fully engaged in the truth of the story that we were telling, that like the joke I put on paper to make us laugh turned into this like real heartbreaking, heart-wrenching, hateable, understandable character that like I thought so much about that like I'm just like. That journey to me is what is the podcast in the nutshell. Aww. Was like going from, I mean, getting roasted by Alex in the episode 0 in which I had said like, I really want a serious character.
Oh my God. Uh-huh.
The cap.
How long that last. Yep.
And like, and that's the exact same thing, right? Like, I made, like, I was like, I want to do a serious character, and then I immediately made a lovable dirtbag named the Cap'n, and then because I was surrounded by three people that pushed me and really said, like, you know, help me find the truth of the character, like, Ronnie is someone that broke my heart and that I love with all, and like, that they have ended in this place where they are going to, like, they've ended in this beautiful place of, like, an optimistic future that is still full of struggle and strife and hardship is like, it's everything that I wanted. It's everything I wanted.
God, not to interrupt you, but like something that I wish I would have thought to bring up earlier when we were talking about like moments of the game that really like hit for us, that moment when you like changed a detail on Ronnie's character sheet was like, to me, one of the dopest things that happened in this 14 hours.
So right.
Was like, because it was such an interesting decision, and it was like such a, not just a mechanical thing, like as a game designer or like theory nerd of it, to be like, oh, this is a fascinating moment that we can like look at and unpack later in terms of like mechanics, but just literally as somebody at the table with you to be like, oh my god, Ronnie's come so far, like, wow.
Yeah,
because that's indicative of something like on a mechanical level that's not just a choice you are making. It's like a fundamental truth about the character that has been radically mm-hmm. altered in some way. And to feel like that moment was earned like by you to such an extent that you had to change something literal about your character to do it was like such a cool moment.
Well, we have come to the end of it then. Jeff, Alex, B, thank you so, so much from the bottom of my heart for being here with me for all of this. I hope for those listening that this will not be the end of the four of us recording. We've talked off mic. The possibility is there in the future. Who knows what is going to happen? But like like Alex said, all three of you are on my hard yes list because it is a delight to play games with you. And it is an especial delight to play a game that we made together to be the game that we wanted to play. And we're going to have a chance to have everyone see what that means when the text gets finished. So
it's not often that you get to play a podcast with the people who are the world's foremost authorities on the game.
Yeah,
that's right.
So that's kind of neat.
Pretty special. So ends Iron Edda Reforged Season 1, Puppet Strix.
Hi, my name is Jupiter Morningstar. I've been your editor for Iron Edda Reforged Puppet Strings. You may recognize my voice as the advertisements in the brain pool in episode 3. I just wanted to jump in here right at the end and share my final thoughts on this whole show, and this show has been just so incredibly fun to work on. It's honestly one of my favorite podcasts I've ever worked on. I've been podcasting both behind the mic and behind the scenes for 4-5 years, and this show really has been such a unique challenge, such a unique show for me to work on. This is my first actual play show I've ever worked on, and it is the editing challenges, the new ways that I've had to approach these episodes, the wild confidence that I approach this show, and then the immediate challenges I faced. It's all just been such an incredible learning experience, such an incredible thing, and I wanted to talk about some of my favorite moments from the show. The first sound effect that I made for the show was the house falling in episode 1. That whole process was really like, you know, I'd done a little bit of sound effect work here and there, but like that was like my first big test of my sound engineering ability, and it was just really fun to make. And I just remember feeling so nervous when I sent the episode off to Tracy, because I was just like, oh my gosh, is it good? Did I fuck it up? like I just was so nervous, and then just hearing Tracy's feedback, just being like, nope, it's great. And it's just like, fuck yeah, okay, great, hell yeah. But like, in terms, so like that's even still, like, you know, even up to the end and all of the sound effects work that I've done and the you know, the advertisements in episode three, I think, technically. Are we counting session zero as episode one? I don't know. It was incredibly fun. There were a lot of, like, really, really fun sound effect moments from the show, but that house falling is still my favorite. And story beats? I mean, Alex, Jeff B., and Tracy are such incredible players, such incredible performers, and I was routinely shocked. Because, you know, when I'm editing, I'm listening through at like 1.5 times speed, so they're all chipmunks to me. But I would just be routinely shocked by the story beats, the way that they were able to play these characters, the way that they were able to do all of this and pull it all together in such a complete and wonderful way. I had no expectations when I went into this project, and I found myself blown away by it. I think my favorite moment, my favorite story moment, I mean, it's hard to get past that boat scene, isn't it? That boat scene is so... It solidified, even for me in the editing bay, what this show was. It solidified what I was supposed to do as the editor and what they, as the players, were doing. And I just really love that houseboat moment. But I think my favorite moment is, and I believe it was Jeff who said this, and then I integrated it. At the end of the Hand of Tyr fight, the Hand of Tyr saying all of the names of that it had in its database, and then ending with B's character, who I am failing to remember the name of at the moment, but that moment was just so, like, that just hit so hard for me, and was one of those moments, because, like, I had free rein of, like, what moments I would embellish with sound effects and what moments I would just let sit, and that was a moment that I had to embellish. That was a moment that I had to put together, and it just hit so hard, even when they were all chipmunks. It was one of the moments where after I finished it, I just listened to it over and over again and, like, tweaked it a little bit just to make sure that it was all perfect, because I wanted it to be perfect. And yeah, that's my favorite story moment. But the last thing I will say is that, because I'm the kind of person who will not stop making stuff and going into a whole bunch of different mediums, and I never stop for any reason. So of course, I'm also in the background working on my own TTRPG game system, and it's been something I've been thinking about for years upon years, and tweaking in my head, and, you know, it's finally getting to the point where it's, like, approaching a playtesting phase, and it's just like, oh my god. And it was missing something. It absolutely was. And there were things about it that I knew I wanted to be there, but it was missing a heart. And listening and editing this podcast and hearing the amount of the system that is in this game of creating characters and then creating details for them and being able to flesh out these characters in minutes, that is so fucking amazing. Like, that is so goddamn cool. And it is one of, like, my favorite things in a TTRPG I've ever heard. And I'm not just going to copy it for my game, but it has been a wonderful inspiration point for the methodology that I want to bring into my own game development. And I want to thank Tracy and B and Alex and Jeff for being part of that inspiration. And also, I just want to play this game at some point. All right, Tracy, fucking hit me up. Oh my goodness. All right, that's it from me. Thank you so much. I really hope that you've enjoyed this whole show, and I'll let Tracy end it off. Bye.
And so, we're finished. Iron Eddery Forged Season 1, Puppet Strings, is in the books. And first, I want to do a quick apology for how long it's taken me to get this episode out. I tend to have problems with endings. I don't know. I don't like to transition away from a thing that I've become familiar with. And I've become very familiar with how we do this. It's taken us a while to get there, schedules, what have you, but this has been such an intensely gratifying experience to do this podcast with B and Alex and Jeff and with Jupiter. And I'm really glad that you got to hear Jupiter's take on things at the end there. She asked if she could include that, and I was very, very supportive of that idea because we've all done this together this entire time. It has been so good, and I stand by what I said there at the end. Like, I really love Iron Edda. Conceptually, it's a lot, and this system, I think, will do some amazing, amazing things when people have a more accessible on-ramp to it. So I'm excited for that time to come. I'm excited for what's going to come next for the Eddic engine, and I'm excited for people to see what all it can do. A quick note as we're wrapping this up. If you've not yet picked up Iron Edda Reforged, the alpha is on itch, and right now, at this exact moment that I'm posting this, you've got about 2 days left for one of the bundles, and you've got most of a month left for the other. But Iron Edda Reforged, the Season 1 Alpha, is in both the Bundle for Ukraine and the TTRPG for Trans Rights bundle to support nonprofits in Texas. Either of those two bundles is a fantastic, fantastic thing to support just on its own, let alone you also get the game that you've been listening to. I am close to wrapping up my final words for the game, which means I will be then handing off the text to Dominique Dickey, who is the editor for Iron Edda Reforged, and then I will be updating the PDF to beta. So once all of the words in draft form are done, the PDF will become the beta, the price is going to go up a little bit, and then once Dominique's edits are done, I'll get everything finally laid in, and the final will be ready to go. So I'm hopeful that that's going to be, well, probably before the summer, but we haven't laid out any official timetables. Still, if you want to see what this is all about, if you want to see what we've been working from, if you want to see what we have made, then check out the show notes. The links to both of those bundles are there. You'll be able to find either of them. The bundle for Ukraine, I think, is $10 to get in, and the TTRPGs for Trans Rights bundle is only $5. They're both causes that I feel very strongly about, and I would love to see more people support it, especially if you do so because of Iron Edda Reforged. That would just be an extra delight. So yeah, we've reached the end of it. I know that for this feed, we are going to feature all of the audio from Season 1 in the Bubble, which is still airing live on Twitch. We have, I believe, 3 more episodes of that to go to get the shows done. And then I'll be editing all of that audio into podcast form. And then what's going to come for this feed is, as of yet, a mystery. I have some things planned. I have some ideas in the works, but I don't know if anything is going to be for certain. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I intend to keep my options open and to see what very cool things I might be able to pull together to make this feed continue to be something that people want to listen to. If you have listened, if you have reviewed, if you have supported me on Patreon because of this, thank you all so much. I very deeply, greatly appreciate it, and I'm thrilled to have been able to put this together. To my co-creators, Alex and B and Jeff, you are all spectacular and have been phenomenal to work with, and I'll repeat what I said in my outro. This game would not have become what it is without you. I needed you all to get here, and I'm very grateful that we've done so, because we've made something that I believe in very, very strongly. And Jupiter, thank you so much for your work on this show. You have eased my burden of production a great deal. Not easy to find the groove with a new baby in the house, but you know, she's 8.5 months old now, and things are changing, so I'm going to shoulder more of that burden myself, but I'm really glad that I got to have you on this show. I'm really glad that I got to hear your work. I'm very proud of what we've all put out together. So, until next time, thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. We'll see you later. Bye. If you enjoyed this show, you should check out more shows on the One Shot Podcast Network. Shows like System Mastery. System Mastery is a delightful stroll through the history of role-playing games, except the games are terrible and the hosts are real jerks about everything. Join hosts Jeff and John as they explore the weirdest games ever made to talk about what worked, what went wrong, and which Silverhawk was the best. It was Hot Wing, don't even at them. Find their shows at SystemMasteryPodcast.com.